Recorded live from the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Pelias Pecans.
Awesome!
The Soft Verbal Podcast, your ticket to the latest, most accurate Ole Miss football recruiting information. No spin, no false hopes, just facts from the recruiting trail from RebelGrove.com recruiting analyst Russell Johnson.
Caution, you are about to enter the no spin zone.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
God, here we go again.
Welcome into another edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. I'm Neil McCready. Russell Johnson is here as well. We will talk recruiting a good bit on this show since the show is about recruiting. Nick Kruger of Rivals.com was in Atlanta for the Rivals 5-Star Challenge presented by Adidas. So we'll talk to Nick a little bit about what he saw in Atlanta, who stood out, who impressed him. I'm sure Russell will have some specific questions for him. We'll take some of your questions off of the RebelGrove.com message board. Lots of questions, some of them from the same people. We'll get to some of those. We won't get to all of those. We'll get to some of them today on the show. Plan to be with you for, I don't know, about 45 minutes or so. That's the plan. So we'll talk some recruiting here in a minute. First, let me tell you about Billy's Pecans. It's in Crenshaw, Mississippi, but you can get everything you need online. Billy'sPecans.com. They have a fabulous product line. Everything you could possibly want. Pecans, goodies. I like just the toasted pecans, the cinnamon spice pecans, fantastic. Chocolate, the Grand Marnier chocolate pecans. Remarkably good. They've got the Cheese Krispies, award-winning coffee cakes, so much more. They're at Billy's Pecans, billyspecans.com. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900 is the number. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. There's no haggling. It is right to the bottom line. Tell Corey what Ford you're looking for. You're going to get that quote, and then it's up to you. You can shop it around, or you can let Corey and the people at Clark Ford take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. Great service after the sale, great Ford product, everything you could possibly want, and so easy. So call that number again, 662-257-1900, and at the end of your deal, tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. It's $500 off, the bottom line, on your deal at Clark Ford. How are you?
Doing good. I am taking a quick glance at the commit list. Looks like they gained 11 commitments in the month of June.
Yeah, it felt like one every day.
It really did. It really did between myself and Chad Simmons. You know, obviously, Chad gets most of the Georgia kids. He gets the stories pre-written and everything. But yeah, it was quite a hefty workload for the month of June. A lot contrary to normally, you know, after the camp circuit, normally things kind of slow down. But it seemed like going into this new dead period because of the early signing period and early official visits, a lot of schools are pushing for commitments either during the dead period now or right before it ended or started.
A lot of offensive linemen. That's the one thing that sticks out.
Seven.
Yeah, which is a lot.
You can't even put them all on the field at one time, can you?
Well, you could. You could put one at fullback.
One at fullback, one
you
at tight
put
end.
One at tight end.
I mean, the way tight end recruiting is going right now, you might have to.
All right, let's start here. We're gonna go to Nick in 8 to 10 minutes or so. A lot of talk about running backs. We've talked about Ely on the Oxford Exxon podcast. I wrote about him in 10 Weekend Thoughts, which is a part of Rivals.com. You can subscribe to Rivals.com and get RebelGrove.com for the price for a month for cheaper than you can get a Subway sandwich meal. Honestly, it's if you're just using this podcast as a your sole consumption of recruiting, you're kind of missing out. There's a lot on the message board. It's a message board. It's a community that you would enjoy being a part of. I know a lot of you are using a friend's password. Let's just keep it real. We'd appreciate it if you'd do us a solid. Subscribe to RebelGrove.com. Be part of the RebelGrove.com community. We would appreciate it. We would benefit from it. The more subscribers we have, the more that we can do with the site. It's really as simple as that. So when you use your password or you give your password to 10 friends, you're just hurting us. and ultimately hurting yourself as a consumer because you get less than you would get if we had more.
That's right. Yeah.
That's how it works. So Ely is committed. He's an elite baseball prospect. He is projected as a top half of the first round pick. It's my belief that he's never going to play college football. It's your belief as well.
Yes, and there's also been some rumblings that he might not even play high school football his senior year. There's been some talks in the agent communities in the baseball world that some teams at the top of the first round next year might ask him not to play, which would obviously cause a stir, not only in Mississippi, but it would also cause a little bit of a panic on the Ole Miss football staff, especially at the running back position.
You mentioned a panic. If they can't sign a running back, it's going to be a panic. I know Eric Gray just committed to Michigan. A lot of people say don't read too much into that. Okay, I won't, because kids commit. Let's face it. Kids commit now because of a couple of reasons. Someone greases their palm to commit, and they like the social media attention that comes with the commitment.
Yes.
And then when that attention wears off, they start craving it again, and the only way to get it is to hashtag respect my decision, no interviews, but I'm decommitting from the University of X and reopening my options so that one day they can recommit to a new school and get the influx of social media attention that comes with it.
I was going to say,
PSA, don't tweet at recruits. Don't tweet at recruits.
I saw that. What happened that had you say that?
I just noticed on Eric Gray where he had announced he was going to make his decision, and all of these people come in behind it with Giggum or hottie toddy or whatever. It's just no.
Yeah, it gets really bad.
When you're an adult tweeting at a 17-year-old boy that you don't know, you're creepy, without exceptions.
100%, and it yeah.
It's a zero tolerance policy. I'm literally going to start. I am. I've made up my mind on Twitter. And I know people are like, "Well, you're just doing this to your own." If I see a person tweeting at a kid, I'm going to block that person.
Yeah, I mean,
it's an unhealthy thing.
It's unhealthy, and it's also an NCAA violation. At least it can become one pretty fairly easily. But you were talking about craving either the social media phenomenon, or were you talking about them craving again the greasy palms? Because I think it becomes
both.
A little bit of both.
It's both,
and the greasy palms become a little bit more slippery as December and February approach. And as that happens, and you know, a lot of these teams who are becoming, you know, top five and top 10 schools in recruiting right now in April, May, June, July, even August, those schools are going to end up struggling as the calendar progresses. And like I said, December and February approach, because those palms, which they might not have had the offers on the table and the things available to them back then, but they will have them at that time. And then that's when things start to shift.
I think Neymar Jr., let's see what happened here. Oh, he was stepped on.
Gosh, Neymar is
difficult to believe that resulted in that degree of pain.
The amount of flopping in South American soccer, it makes it a little bit hard to watch.
It is the one thing about it that is hard to watch. Now, I don't doubt for a minute that hurt, but I find it difficult to believe that it hurt that much. Anyway, so if let's say for the sake of it that Gray's off the table, and I know you think he's not.
Yeah.
And Ely plays professional baseball and doesn't come to college. Who are the running backs that are out there that twofold are legitimate targets and B, have the ability to be impact players?
There's a running back at Hoover. His name is Larry McCammon. He has an Ole Miss offer. He's included them in a top schools list. And you know, obviously Ole Miss recruiting the state of Alabama as they did last year. They haven't recruited it near as heavily this year, so it wouldn't surprise me if they tried to get in there. There's also some running backs in the state of Texas. Darwin Barlow is the one that I would keep the closest eye on. He's visited Minnesota and quite a few schools that are outside of the normal Texas realm of schools. He's a 4-star on Rivals.com. And then you've got the three in-state guys who are borderline at best. Ole Miss really wanted Zias Perriman from Laurel to come camp at Ole Miss to see his 40 time and see how he did in drills and all that. He didn't end up coming. Snoop Connor from Hattiesburg plays quarterback for them. He ran a 4.6, 4.7 at the camp this summer, And he's someone that they'll take, but I think it's almost as a take if you have to, not take if you want to thing with Snoop. Snoop would be, in my opinion, one of the last resorts at running back. He is a solid back, but I could see him end up replacing Rodriguez Clark, who's currently committed to Memphis on the Tigers commitment list. When Rodriguez Clark starts getting the Power Five offers that his teammate Jaleel Clemens, who plays defensive end for Starkville, did.
Before we get to Nick, you were predisposed doing a lot of other things late last week. You were not in Atlanta. You've talked to people that were. How many Ole Miss targets were there legitimately? I know there were a handful, and of those guys, how many kind of stood out?
I would say that Mingo really, you know, kind of made a name for himself. Obviously, he made a name for himself at the Rivals camp in Mobile, but being able to top that off with a five-star challenge where, you know, multiple people I've talked to, I'm interested to see what Nick has to say. They were saying that he was one of the most top five receivers there. You know, him, and then you've got Stacey Wilkins from Arkansas, who they have Jordan Tamu recruiting. They've got several of the Samoan descent recruiting with Stacey Wilkins, but right now it looks to be Oklahoma in the driver's seat for him. But, you know, realistic targets, then you've got McKinley Jackson, the 2025 star, who I guess I was told had a pretty rough first morning of the camp, but as the day progressed, he started to dominate again and kind of showed why he is the first five-star in Mississippi since Cam Akers.
Why weren't more Mississippi kids there?
They didn't come to the Rivals camp. And when it comes down to it, Mississippi kids are never going to get the benefit of the doubt to get that Rivals camp, that Rivals five-star invite if they didn't camp. Because, I mean, let's face it, the kids from Georgia, Florida, Texas, California, those are the ones who, even if they don't go to the Rivals camp, they're still going to get invited. Number one, because they know they'll show up. Number two, because they know that they're going to qualify.
That's a big one.
Yeah, they know they're going to qualify. At least they're closer to qualifying than some of these Mississippi kids. And that the attitude is not going to be, they're not going to have problems with attitudes. They're not going to have problems with, you know, potentially, you know, some altercations taking place or anything like that. There's no risk of that. That's why some of the 2020 kids from Marietta High School in Georgia ended up getting invited, who may or may not have participated in the Rivals three-stripe camps.
Yeah, getting them to show up is an issue.
It is, because certain people in the state don't want them going to certain camps.
Who are those certain people? You don't feel comfortable saying?
No.
Because they want them to go to the Under Armour camps or the Nike opening camps?
Or? Yes, they want them to take place in those camps because they feel that...
Why not do all of the camps like the kids in the other states do?
That's exactly. I mean, but then you've got so many problems.
Because do you then relinquish some control over the kid?
Yes. Yes, and those,
and therefore
those
your ability to get paid?
Yes, and those people don't want to lose control.
And before anybody thinks, oh my God, you're saying this, the only difference between me and the majority of people that cover this is that I'm willing to say it out loud. Everyone knows it exists.
Everyone.
Everyone knows it exists. They're handlers. They have their monies out. Their hands out. They're taking a cut on the payments. They're arranging the payments, the whole shooting match. I'm just willing to say it out loud.
Right, exactly. And with these camps, and like you're talking about, you know, they'll schedule their camps literally like we were talking about, I believe, when we were in Jackson, that what happens is you've got the opening literally just a day after the five-star challenge because of this beef between these two, I guess you call them brands. But what happens is the Nike opening doesn't have any under or any All-American game fully attached to it. And in the meantime, you know, the five-star challenge has the Under Armour game that it's still working pretty closely with.
All right, we're going to stop there, and we're going to get in touch with Nick. We'll bring Nick Kruger on, and then we'll come back after our interview with Nick, and we will take some of your questions from rebelgrove.com. So with that said, here is Nick Kruger of Rivals.com on the Billy's Pecans Hotline.
I've got Nick Kruger joining us on the Software Rebel Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. How you doing, Nick?
Doing great, man. Trying to recuperate and recover after a busy last week, you know?
Yeah, well, it's been a busy last, you know, few months. You think about the whole Rivals camp series, you know, traveling every weekend almost, and then ended up in Atlanta.
No doubt. Yeah, well, I was actually in Atlanta the week before, too, for the Pylon 7-on-7 National Championship. So I've been you know, and I was living there. I kind of missed it going back, but it was good being spending so much time there the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, what did you think? I mean, did you eat at the same place both weekends, or did you kind of experience a little bit two different sides of Atlanta?
Well, the nice thing is I hadn't had a chance to see the new Falcon Stadium, obviously, so getting a chance to get in there a couple of times and get on the ground level and take a look around was really impressive. I like to diversify. I know all the neighborhoods around town pretty well, so when I go back there, I'm never eating in the same place twice.
That's right. Yeah, I'm from the Marietta area, so I know Atlanta really well.
Yeah, man, that's great.
Yeah, so what did you think of the five-star challenge? Obviously, you know, bringing it back to its original home, that was where Rivals had their first five-star challenge, wasn't it?
Oh, man, it was, yeah. And we had it at the Lakewood. I can't remember the full name of the stadium. It's the Lakewood High School football stadium out there. It's like a, you know, multi-use stadium for a lot of the Southside Atlanta public schools. And, I mean, it was just so hot. It was so miserable. And to get inside a dome again where you have air conditioning, you don't have to worry about it anymore.
Right.
It was really a godsend.
Yeah, I can imagine the Mercedes-Benz Stadium had the air conditioning part taken care of for you.
That's right, definitely. I mean, even in some of the past years when we did it in Baltimore and Soldier Field was another year we did it. You know, it's really unpredictable. I mean, the weather really came in hard. And when the event started, the ceiling was open, but fortunately they were able to get it closed up before the rain started coming in too bad, and everything went off without a hitch, man. It was a great time.
That's crazy. Now, talking a little bit about the five-star challenge, what were some of your most impressive performers?
Well, so, you know, when the analyst crew all gets there, we're all in charge of watching, specific position groups because we have follow-up stories to do. I was in charge of the running back specifically, so I'll start there. I mean, the guy that I was most concerned about, obviously coming from Texas, was Zach Evans, who's a 2025 star, and he actually had kind of a rough go of it because, you know, his footwear was kind of failing him early, and then once he made a run in the one-on-one drills against the linebackers in the pass, running one-on-ones and pass coverage and all that. Justin Flo actually rolled up on him behind his ankle and kind of ended his day early. And that's really, you know, I mean, the last thing that we want for these guys to come out here for our camps is to leave with an injury. So I think he was fine, but we didn't obviously want to chance it. And so that was a little disappointing that we weren't able to see a little bit more of him because he's a really impressive prospect. But I think, you know, the other running backs that were there, Devin Ford looked okay. And, the other guy that impressed me a lot was Trey Sanders. And he's a top 10 player in the country. But my last point of reference with him really was the Future 50 event in January. And to me, he seemed, he trimmed up a little bit. Not that he was ever out of shape by any means. He's just a big guy. But he seemed to be a little more, a little bit more fit, a little bit more agile. I mean, he was really just jump cutting, bursting. Made big plays in the passing game, especially in the 7-on-7 tournament. He was making big plays downfield, more plays downfield and making deep catches more so than some of the receivers on his team. So, I think it's safe to say, obviously it's not a real compelling conversation to say, oh, this top 10 guy is, you know, the most impressive guy there. But I mean, he really, you know, there's a lot of guys that do show up and you're kind of like, maybe he's a little bit overrated, but Trey Sanders definitely fit the bill, I thought. And, you know, just going back and the receiver group in general in 2019 is just such a deep class, especially in my neck of the woods in Texas. And everybody that came from Texas as a wide receiver, I thought represented themselves real well. Theo Weiss won a couple of reps against Derek Stingley, who's the new number one player in the country at cornerback. Trajan Bridges won the wide receiver MVP, and he's a guy that's just consistently explosive at every event that you go to see him at. And, you know, and I think there's, you know, the interesting thing about him is there's some conversation about, you know, oh, in the past he's maybe had some attitude problems or he'll check out or things of that nature. But I think, you know, watching him compete, I mean, this guy has never said no to competition as far as I'm concerned, whether we're talking about on the high school level, camps, 7-on-7 tournaments. He's been one of the hardest workers that I've seen all spring and summer, and is just consistently explosive and has great downfield, receiving ability. And then the other guys that we had were Elijah Higgins and Garrett Wilson as well, the recent Ohio State commit, and both those guys were consistently good on the day too.
Now, Bridges and Weiss, they're both committed to Oklahoma. Are those commitments set in stone, or do you see either one of them kind of looking around as the season Buccaneers?
Well, you know, as Oklahoma fans will recall, Theo Weiss and R.J. Henderson, you know, were guys that had committed to Oklahoma early and then decommitted, like, just before Bob Stoops had stepped down and then, you know, recently recommitted again this spring. So I think, you know, I think at this point now, you know, the book is probably mostly closed on Theo. I wouldn't be surprised to hear him, hear that he's taking a look around at some point as we get closer to the end of the fall, just to kind of see what else is out there. But I don't think he's particularly motivated to change his commitment at this point. Trajan Bridges, I think, is probably the most solid of the three, honestly. I mean, R.J. Henderson has been committed to a couple of different places at this point, you know, Oklahoma being two of them. But,
two of them.
But I think, you know, I think Trajan is pretty happy with his commitment, likes the direction of the class. I mean, Oklahoma's done such a nice job recruiting in the past two classes, especially now that everybody's so confident in Lincoln Riley and what he's able to do offensively out there. And obviously the program just rewarded him with a contract extension as well. So I think, you know, if there was any sort of hesitation for whatever reason, I think the way things ended last season for Oklahoma and the way things are looking going forward, especially with all this facility upgrades that they're doing, you know, the excitement around the coaching staff, I think everybody's got a real positive feeling about him. And anybody who's committed to Oklahoma at this point, I think is probably more than likely to keep that commitment.
Right, yeah, I know Jerrion Jones from Mississippi was committed there at one point. He committed literally just hours after his official visit there ended, and he kind of wavered on his commitment, ended up flipping to Mississippi State. So yeah, I think like you said, I think most of Oklahoma's commits are kind of done with their flip-flopping and everything. Now, on the offensive, mm-hmm. offensive, defensive, like the one-on-ones, O-line, D-line, how much of that did you get to see?
So I watched a little bit of it because at the same time that was going on was when they started doing the open field tackling drills between the running backs and the linebackers, which is something that I had to pay closer attention to. But you know, the thing about the five-star challenge this year is, you know, as most people know, it was scheduled pretty closely to the opening, which is going on right now, and you know, there's a lot of player movement between guys deciding which event or if both, you know, they wanted to compete in. And on top of that, you know, every year you always have guys that need to be replaced, bail out last second for whatever reason, come up with some kind of phantom injury, so on and so forth. And really what we ended up with in this year's group at the five-star challenge is we didn't really have a lot of interior defensive linemen. We had a lot of defensive ends and a lot of good offensive linemen. But there really wasn't much of a deep field in terms of guys that were really going to push those guys on the interior. Guys like Dante Lucas, Cardell Thomas, Branson Bragg, all these guys that, you know, are known commodities as real dominant, powerful interior linemen. You know, they really could just not that the guys they were going up against weren't talented, but they definitely had a positional and situational advantage in most cases in those one-on-one drills. So, you know, I thought the offensive line guys probably got the better of, you know, just generally speaking, of the defensive linemen. But that's not to say that there weren't some good performances out on the edge by some of the defensive linemen as well. So, you know, it's always that's always the, regardless of who you got going against each other, it's always interesting to watch because there's more physical contact there than there is in any other camp scenario. So there's just naturally going to be some jawing back and forth and some tempers flaring and things like that. But, you know, I thought for the most part, it was the offensive lineman's day and a lot of those guys did really well.
Did you get to see much of McKinley Jackson, the 2025 star from George County, Mississippi?
Nope. I didn't see quite as much of him. I took a look at the, you know, I took a look at the guys that, you know, I was, you know, I had to keep track of for my own purposes, and, you know, McKinley Jackson was kind of low on the priority scale, but I would encourage anybody who has any questions about that to take a look at the Rivals.com YouTube page, because all the one-on-one drills, both for offensive and defensive linemen and skill players, are posted as well. So, you know, you guys can get a good eyeful for yourself. And I know many of your subscribers and message board posters around the network no more than I do anyway, so it's good for them to see it for themselves.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, with the message board posters who are the hashtag evaluators. So, yeah.
Right, exactly.
Chris Bogle ended up walking away with the defensive line MVP. You were talking about how mostly, for the most part, the offensive line seemed to have kind of won the day. Do you think he's somebody who could approach five-star territory after his performance, or could you see him kind of just rising up a little bit further in the Rivals 100?
Yeah, I mean, I think in looking the way that he performed, there were a lot of good things that you like to that you took from what you saw out there. I mean, he played with great leverage, played with great burst and speed, get off the line, you know, all those buzzwords that everybody likes to talk about. That basically just comes down to how explosive a guy is. And for a guy like him who, you know, wasn't necessarily maybe the biggest defensive end there, you know, I thought he showed a lot of resourcefulness in terms of, you know, what he was able to do getting into his second move. You know, re-diagnosing what was going on with, you know, with the offensive line sets coming out of the snap. And, you know, I really liked the way that he played. He showed good inside move, good rip. You know, and I think if the pads were on and it was a situation where, you know, maybe if we did some like inside run type drills, you know, and full pads and things like that, as you would see it as like the All-American games at the end of the year, you know, I still think he would be effective. As far as that stuff goes, because I thought he played with such good burst, such good energy, and really just had the kind of had the nice natural lean and length to push the pocket that I thought, you know, he was pretty effective. Let me take a look and see. He's 50 right now on the Rivals 100. I don't know if he showed well enough to immediately start jump into the five-star conversation. Necessarily, but there's still three rankings periods that we have coming up between now and you know, the end of when we rank the 2019 class. And based on what I saw, you know, I thought for sure he definitely showed well enough to at least make some gains in his ranking, and I think continue that upwards movement towards that upper echelon.
A gun to your head, where do you think Elijah Higgins ends up?
I thought coming into the five-star challenge, I thought Stanford would be a pretty good pick for him. But the thing about that, as we've seen with Branson Bragg, who I mentioned earlier, is a lot of these guys that are Stanford bound don't take their official visits until after the season's over. And then kind of the smoke signal goes up when they start the application process and the acceptance process to Stanford. And that's not really something that I've heard much with him. A lot of teams are involved with him. You know, I think Texas has been real hot and cold in terms of, you know, just the mutual interest at different points. And so I don't know. I would guess that Florida's a leader right now. He showed up wearing a Gators hat. He said it was just because it matched his jacket that he was told to show up in. But he also did take his most recent visit out there. I think he's interested to hear what Ole Miss has to show him going forward. I think Stanford's in there because, you know, since the start of his recruitment, he was interested in schools like Stanford, schools like Notre Dame that really put a premium on academic, academic potential as well as the athletic potential. And, you know, if he doesn't, I know he's going to make a commitment here sometime this month, probably in all likelihood, you know, and then I think if it's not Stanford, I think, you know, obviously you cross them off the list because I don't think the motivation will be real high for him to continue on there. But a gun to my head, I would at this point, I would probably say Florida, just because that's the most recent visit. He seemed to have a lot of positive things to say, a lot of family out there. But, you know, once he gets more involved with schools like Ole Miss or some of these other schools that have kind of been in the picture as well, you know, that could change his interest a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Now during the 7-on-7 portion, how much did you get to see of Jonathan Mingo?
During the 7-on-7 portion, not quite as much. You know, I was shooting video throughout the entire tournament, and I was also the way, for those who aren't familiar, the way that the five-star challenge is set up is all the analysts get together and we draft four separate teams. And my team was Team No Cap, as named by the Adidas reps that are helping us out with the event. And I was also shooting video during the 7-on-7 tournament, so I was kind of more interested in watching the team that I drafted and how well they did, of which he was not on my team, unfortunately. But I did see enough of him to know that he was really impressive physically, one of the best receivers there in terms of a power type receiver. I was really taken with just how big physically he was and how well he ran with you know just just pure torque, pure energy, just that strength off the line. You know, these bigger receivers that we have in this class, you know, just it's incredible. I mean, a lot of these guys are fringe tight ends playing out on the perimeter, and they're built like it too. And he's one of those guys, just a real physically imposing guy that has the speed to get behind a corner, you know, off the line. And then obviously with the being as big as he is, you know, it makes it real difficult for defensive backs to make up that ground on him. He seals him off pretty well. And, you know, most of my experience was watching him in the one-on-ones, but he was very impressive at that point.
Now, obviously, you talk about some of the people who were impressive and may rise up the boards. And obviously, I read the bear market thing was Adonis Ote. Were there anybody else that you saw in person that you thought maybe a little bit overrated and might need to rewatch some tape and rewatch some film going forward? Doesn't have to be in Texas.
Well, so, you know, my sample size with these guys is, you know, in a lot of cases is pretty minimal. I only have Texas as my region. So my, you know,
that's a hell of a region.
My scope is based on those guys. I do see a number of these guys during the 7-on-7 season, Ote being one of them, because, you know, a lot of the Louisiana tournaments, as you know, we were in Louisiana together a couple months ago. You know, so Ote was a guy that, you know, again, I was, I agree. He was somebody that I didn't think necessarily, had a particularly strong showing for himself. I think a lot of people take a look at the one-on-one reps that we were talking about where, you know, like I said, Theo was able to get some wins on, Derek Stingley. And there's definitely going to be some questions. Is he worthy of being the number one guy after this? I mean, in the 7-on-7, truthfully, Stingley was on my team. And some of his biggest plays came from him playing offense more so than defense.
So, really?
I'm not sure what that says about our decision there. But, you know, I thought that, you know, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more from – there weren't necessarily guys that I am going to be so critical of and say they are overrated. There were definitely guys that I thought had a great opportunity – to juice their ranking, to show that they had a lot more in the tank than we initially thought, and move higher up the rankings. Like the one guy that I was looking hardest at was Marcus Stripling. I mean, you look at him walking into a room. There's not a lot of defensive ends that look physically better than he is. And when he was at our Houston camp earlier in the spring, somebody lit a fuse under him. I mean, he was talking, he was jawing, he was getting after, playing with a lot of attitude. And I said, you know, to myself coming in, I thought if he brought that same sort of energy, that same sort of fire to the five-star challenge, this is the guy that we're talking about, back in the 6.0 status, you know, a fringe five-star, guy. And, you know, I mean, he did okay, but he didn't quite come out with that same level, that I had anticipated him coming in for. So there were a couple guys, you know, that I thought kind of fell more into that category rather than guys that just outright just did not look good. Mark Anthony Richards, the running back, going back to the running back conversation. You know, I wrote a story today. I thought he reminded me a lot of So-So Jamabo, which, you know, going back to a conversation about the first five-star challenge, I believe he was in that. I believe he was in that group as a five-star running back out of Texas. And this is before I was even in Texas, and, you know, he's gone on to a career at UCLA that's kind of been, you know, somewhat underwhelming considering he was ranked a five-star coming out of high school, and I saw a lot of the same thing in Mark Anthony Richards. So, you know, guys maybe that aren't necessarily, you know, big needle mover names that I thought had the potential to really put themselves on the map a little bit more than they already were. You know, those guys kind of fall into that category, but nobody that I'm willing to come out and say just fell flat on their face and did a terrible job.
Right. I can understand that. Now, did a quarterback kind of separate themselves? I know, obviously, that's been the topic of discussion all since the 2019 class has really become prevalent, was the fact of how weak this quarterback class was, and no one was really able to kind of take the reins.
Yeah, tell me about it. Well, you know, I mean, truthfully, you know, I've been, you know, again, going back to Texas, as far as Grant Cannell is concerned, I mean, he's a guy that I've been trying to give the benefit of the doubt to for a long time. I've really been going through it, you know, with the analyst. And he was another guy that I thought if he showed up and played lights out at our camp, you know, he could really kind of quell some of the conversation that the other analysts kind of had of him. I mean, the setting couldn't have been more favorable for him in terms of, you know, playing in the dome, like we said, you know, because the last time everybody saw him all at once was at the Future 50, where it was just a wind tunnel inside the Camping World Stadium, as it's called now. And so it really wasn't a great scenario for him. But, you know, honestly, he had a tough day, too. As far as, and maybe that's a better answer for your last question than it is this one. I think as far as the quarterbacks that performed really well, you know, I thought, you know, just going back to memory, I would say the quarterbacks on the white team was Sam Howell and, I can't remember who the other one was, but those two guys did pretty well.
Was it Burnett?
I think was another one. The Wisconsin commit, he looked pretty good. Polinsky was okay. The South Carolina commit. You know, Bo Nix was our quarterback.
Oh, okay.
You know, on our team, and he was a guy that did well. You know, he's somebody that does well. He's not somebody that blows you away. You know, but I mean, he obviously did well enough for us to win the 7-on-7 tournament, which I'll be bragging about later to my coworkers. several. The conference calls going forward, you know, so there were guys that, yeah, I mean, and that's just kind of been the story in general for the 2019 class of quarterbacks. There's guys that you see that you like, guys that'll get the job done for you, but nobody that you see, and you just, you know, and your jaw drops and you say, man, this guy's destined for, you know, a big time career, you know?
Yeah. It's the complete opposite of what I think, at least the 2020 class has a chance to be, especially in the state of Texas and from a quarterback standpoint.
Oh, for sure. There's guys in 2020 in Texas. And see, the quarterbacks in the 2020 class in Texas are, you know, that's a conversation more about potential than it is somebody that's actually a bona fide stud already, in my opinion. I mean, a lot of people are really excited about Malik Hornsby, the Houston area quarterback. He's a dual threat guy and. Somebody that, you know, I mean, the number of people that have come to me and said, why is this guy not in the top 100 already? Why is he not a five-star already? And it's like, let's pump the brakes a little bit, because there's a lot of natural arm talent, a lot of natural ability, but there's still a lot of fine tuning that needs to be done with him. Hudson Card, the 2020 guy that committed to Texas not too long ago, is the playing receiver at Lake Travis up until this year. I actually just saw him throw yesterday or 2 days ago, I guess, at the state 7-on-7 contest. And, you know, he's a guy that plays with a lot of poise, but somebody who needs to really polish up some stuff with, you know, with the quality of his throws themselves. You know, and then there's a couple other guys mixed in there too in the 2020 class. So, you know, I think the potential is there for sure. And with 2 years of high school football left for all these guys to play, that sort of thing is really gonna flesh itself out, you know, going forward. But this is gonna be a big season for me to check in on those guys and see who's taking the steps forward and who's gonna be treading water. Because, you know, the Rivals 250, you know, when it comes to quarterbacks, it's a real touchy subject, and we want to make sure that those guys are in the right spot.
Yeah, definitely. Now, getting back to a little bit from you know, Grant Tisdale's teammate. Probably one of the last questions I'll have for you. Andrew Henry, he's listed as an all-purpose back. Obviously, he plays running back. He's yet to receive really the Power 5 attention that you would think someone from Allen High School would receive. What's kind of been the holdup? Is it his size?
No, Andrew Henry is one of my – I've said this to anybody who will listen. I mean, he's one of my favorite running back prospects in the class this year in the state of Texas. I mean, this is a true all-purpose back in the sense that this is a guy that's, you know, he's probably around the same height that you expect. He's thick enough as a player, but not as dense as most running backs that you see these days that are pure running backs. And this is a guy that makes acrobatic catches, can run downfield, you know, confidently runs a variety of routes and does so well. And when, I mean, any sort of competitive environment you see him in camps or anything like that, he's always super successful and one of the best players just overall that I see in these types of scenarios. And I the holdup, I think, as far as his recruiting is concerned, is he went to a really small private school last season, and or the past 2 seasons rather, and I just don't think the exposure was there for him, other than the camp that he came out to participate in. Obviously, I spent a lot of time writing about them. I put out a lot of video on them. That doesn't necessarily always translate to offers, because I can only be so responsible for that. But I think this year at Allen, you know, with the spotlight on him, if he can get through the pecking order, I'm not sure what else they have in the running back stable. Coach Lamble out there is kind of an old school guy, so there might be some players that, you know, have been waiting their turn in line that he's going to have to work around. But I think once he gets a shot, he's a home run player and a confident guy, and somebody I know who's been, you know, who's really been waiting to break through as far as the offers are concerned. I mean, if he picked up an Ole Miss offer tomorrow, we'll say hypothetically, and committed on the spot,
yeah,
and everybody looked at his offer list and was like, oh, it's just Texas State, it's just Tulsa or whoever, you know what I mean? And they'd be like,
you know, Ole Miss fans pretty well. That's exactly what they would do.
But he's a legit player, and just take my word for it.
now going forward in July, do you get any time off? Are you going anywhere?
There's a couple things going on in Houston this weekend coming up. There's a camp going on with Arian Foster and Andre Johnson are kind of heading up a new camp initiative, I guess, in Houston that I may check out. The weekend after that is Prime 21 in Dallas, of course, which is a big national skill player camp. And then I'll stick around in Dallas for a couple of days for the Big 12 media days. And then after that, I'm sure people are going to be asking me to come to stuff, and I'm going to try to decline all offers at that point.
Yeah, so no vacation coming up for Nick Kruger.
Not at least for 2.5 weeks. I'm gonna see if I can sneak one in here at the end of July.
Yeah, you might need to. You went straight from Atlanta at the 5-star challenge to College Station for that state 7-on-7.
Yeah, I was only there. That actually started on Thursday when we were doing the camp. Right. And then the last 2 days of championship brackets were Friday and Saturday. I traveled home on Friday and was just kind of wiped out, so I just laid off of it. And Saturday, I went there and saw as much as I could. So, but there was still some pretty good, there was still some pretty good talent. Seth McGowan, a 2020 running back at Mesquite Poteet, was out there running around, and he's a guy that I'm really excited about in the 2020 class. Chase Griffin, who's gotten a lot of national attention with his like surprise commitment to UCLA, despite not really having other Power Five offers to speak of, he was out there and looking strong. And a lot of these 7-on-7 tournaments, you know, it's a good showcase for guys like those without the bullets flying, so to speak, to really showcase what they do well physically and technically. And so it was a lot of fun being out there. It was just hot. I missed the dome.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, Nick, I really appreciate the time today, and we'll get you back for sure. You know, kind of as high school football season approaches.
All right, great. Yeah, thanks. Just give me like a 2-hour window to allow me to be late. I appreciate it.
Hey, not a problem at all, man. Have a good one.
All right, you too.
All right, bye.
Bye.
All right, Russell, let's get to some of these questions. I know that you have a handful for yourself, so I'll let you walk through your own questions and answers here, and you can talk on these topics as long as you want. Then we'll go from there.
Okay. Yeah. So first, you know, John Summerall, when he took the job from Troy, you know, everybody had always was wondering, you know, was he an elite recruiter? Did he have the potential to become an elite recruiter? And just where his territories were going to be. I'm sure he does have a small piece of Mississippi, like every single coach on the staff does. But it seems like his main focus has become the state of Louisiana and the state of Alabama, parts of it, especially the Mobile area. But what Summerall's been able to do, at least in the state of Louisiana, is those fringe SEC kids that aren't getting the LSU offers, those are the ones that he is not priding himself on, but he's working on and recruiting actively, and that's what he landed in Caleb Etienne, and that's also what he landed with Tyler Judson. And I fully believe that if Judson had went to LSU's camp knowing that his Ole Miss offer was public, I think LSU would have offered as well, which kind of threw a wrench into LSU's plans, because Judson wasn't to tweet out his Ole Miss offer until he had gotten back from Baton Rouge, which kind of switched some things up and may have ended up
costing him an LSU offer in the end. There's also several other Ole Miss targets that John Summerall has become a big factor on, including Easton cornerback Chester Kimbrough, who our Chad Simmons wrote an article on this morning. It appears that he is not going to end up in the Magnolia State as he once was expected to, but his recruitment also still, you know, could take some turns as time goes on. It seems like the past relationships with the staffs in the Magnolia State have led to that school that he took the job at and leading now. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not a commitment takes place when he gets down to the University of Florida as the dead period ends and gets back going. And then also with Summerall, you've got AJ Finley, the athlete from St. Paul's in Mobile. Finley plays running back, at least at the high school level, and he just recently started learning the defensive side of the ball, and he really showed some flashes of being an SEC contributor at that position during the Ole Miss camps last month in June. What it's going to take with Finley is that he's going to have to learn how to effectively backpedal and just to, you know, get the IQ up there. I mean, obviously he has it playing running back. He knows kind of what's taking place on the defensive side of the ball and trying to read lanes and everything. But at the same time, there's still some things you need to learn if you're going to play safety at the next level, which is what Ole Miss projects him to play. And then, obviously, the hot-button topic I was talking about was with Ely, which we had already kind of touched on. Running back recruiting, the Eric Gray thing and the running back situation, it has all become what it's become because of the previous topic I just mentioned, Jaron Ely. Having Ely on the commitment list is good for in-state. You know, it's quote-unquote helping with DeJuan Black and a couple other in-state targets close to the Jackson area. But at the same time, you've got running backs who are afraid of that 0.01% chance that he plays football.
Well, that's not how it works, though, because the other schools do the smart thing, and they say, hey, this Ely kid's really good, and he's going to sign with Ole Miss. And Ole Miss does the baseball thing, and those schools say, yeah, but, man, you won't know that. Who knows what he's going to do?
Exactly.
And so, because the baseball draft's not till June.
Yeah, and until he makes his just his thoughts known on what he's looking to do.
Whether he signs a professional contract or not.
Right.
But he won't sign a professional contract until at the earliest sometime in June of 2019.
Right, and that's after national letters of intent are in, and most kids in the 2019 class will be on campus at that point. So for that to take place, it scared some running backs off. It scared Eric Gray quite a bit early on. You know, when they first took the commitment from Ely and everything, the communication had stopped and dropped off a little bit, and it just became awkward a little bit because, you know, Gray wants to be the number one guy, which was why the Michigan commitment drew so many question marks, because they had just taken a 4-star running back a week before. Right after his official visit weekend in Ann Arbor ended. So it's interesting timing, interesting placement, and like I said, you know, anything can happen between now and December and February.
All right, so we'll get into some of the questions. What's the grade you would give the Ole Miss class as of today?
I'm not giving a grade right now. It's incomplete. It's incomplete because, you know, as you see, so many of these kids have these early commitments to random places across the country. You've got someone committed to Auburn. You've got someone committed to Georgia. You've got several committed to Mississippi State. All of these recruits are eager to see what takes place on the field. I know we have our disagreements on that, but they are eager to see what takes place on the field and whether or not there will be progress shown on the defensive side of the ball. Because if you talk to people in recruiting circles and just around the country in general, everybody knows that Ole Miss can recruit offensive linemen, quarterbacks, and wide receivers. Defensive linemen and linebackers in Mississippi, those typically go to Mississippi State. And that's become not just a trend, that's become something that takes place every year. If you look at Willie Gay, you look at Nathan Pickering right now, you look at Jonathan Mingo potentially ending up at Ole Miss, you look at, I don't even know, the last highly rated quarterback to sign with Ole Miss from Mississippi, but you look at the recent history at that those positions, and you see Ole Miss recruiting well at that end and Mississippi State recruiting well at that end. And until those merge and, you know, they start to focus a little bit more on the other positions, there's going to become question marks, and people are wanting to see whether or not that's going to take place, whether or not Freddie Roach is going to emerge as a solid defensive line coach in his second year at Ole Miss. They want to see whether John Sumrall is going to be able to get this linebacker core, which is, I would say, slightly better than what he had at Troy, but I'm not exactly sure. I didn't watch too much of Troy this past season, but he's going to have to work. And between him and the graduate assistant they have, Taylor Polk, you know, Taylor Polk, he knew everything about football. There was just some times where he couldn't get to the place he needed to get to make the play.
Oh, the fact that, and this isn't a knock at Taylor at all, because quite frankly, Taylor should be, in many ways, what college football is all about. But the fact that replacing Taylor Polk, who I would assume probably would admit to you that he's physically limited. I mean, he's not 6'3", 235, running a 4.5.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's not. I'm not criticizing Taylor when I say he's shorter than that, he's lighter than that, and he's slower than that.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that replacing him is a major priority and not just a given tells you all you need to know about that defense moving in the next end of the season.
Right, between that and DeMarcus Gates. I mean, those are two main huge holes at linebacker. And seeing how they fill it, seeing whether or not they're able to get some instant impact from one of the freshmen who signed, if they're able to get Kevontae Ruggs in there and on the field early, or if they're putting the trust in Jaquez Jones early on. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, what Sumrall does. And a lot of linebacker recruits, especially ones in state, are anxious to see what takes place.
All right, the obligatory N'Kobe Dean update. We do it every week.
Every week, and this will be my second one in 7 days because I was on the Oxford Exxon podcast.
You were. Thank you.
No problem. But with Dean, you know, it's still the three-team race it is. For some reason, I saw him retweet something about Clemson, and I was like, Clemson? But I forgot that he did visit Clemson, and, you know, Clemson never discounts themselves on anybody, especially somebody in Mississippi. No, exactly. I mean, especially the way Dabo's built that program, it's – hard to say no, and it wouldn't be the first time that the number one player in a state with a power program. Obviously, Ole Miss isn't a blue blood. We've seen that the past 5 years, but with that, it wouldn't be the first time, because last year they took Alabama's number one player and Justin Ross from Alabama and Auburn, signed him, wide receiver. They took Jackson Carman, the number one player in the state of Ohio. Everybody thought was a lock to Ohio State. Ended up at Clemson. So Clemson has no problem taking a number one player in a state that's not South Carolina.
So what do you think on Dean today? If you had to bet today, where's he going?
Today?
Yeah.
Alabama.
Okay. So almost second right now?
Third.
Okay. We've already talked about running backs.
I don't think Ole Miss is going to offer Jabari Small before the end of the summer either. I think now what's going to take place with Small is there's going to be a – we're going to wait and see how you do during your junior season before we think about an offer. Because obviously, you know, with his dad and everything, he wants that offer, and he feels that he deserves that offer. Several members and sources I've talked to expect Small to earn that offer. They don't expect him to get handed that offer as – he earned his Arkansas offer. He earned his North Carolina offer. He earned those offers that he has on the table. Nothing was given to him. But it seems like there's a miscommunication there. And it could, if it costs them Ole Miss Jabari Small, it's going to cost them 4-star offensive tackle Amari Thomas. And if it costs them Amari Thomas, that's another fail in Memphis that they don't want to get going.
I hate the rank. I understand the ranking questions. Where do you think they finish and stuff? It's impossible to answer that.
Yeah. I mean, if right now, you know, you would think with 22 commits, they would be in the top five, you know, pretty squarely. But with 22 commitments right now, they are number 8 in the country on Rivals.com, which I would not – my stomach would not sit well if I was an Ole Miss fan. Because you have 22 commitments. You have more commitments than anybody in the entire country right now.
Well, they're not finishing in the top 10.
No, not at all. But the fact that you have 22 commitments on an SEC West commitment list right now, July 2nd, 2018, and you are not in the top 5 or barely in the top 10 right now, that would scare me a little bit. Obviously, like you said, I don't expect them to end up in the top 10 either. Top 20, top 25, but like you said, I hate doing that too.
Well, it's just impossible.
It is.
Projecting things that are you also, to do that, you have to project how you think other schools will do.
Right.
How you think they'll finish, who's going to get momentum, who's going to make a run, those kind of things. It's impossible.
Yeah, I saw somewhere where LSU media writers are projecting them to go 9-3. What schedule are they looking at?
Yeah, I don't understand that philosophy unless Burrow is going to be a terrific quarterback. There's nothing in his past to indicate that he's going to be a great college quarterback at LSU. Nothing. Now, might he be? Sure. Because there are going to be surprises in college football. There are going to be kids that come out of nowhere, relatively, and become stars. That happens. It happens every year. It's going to happen this year.
Right.
So maybe it's him. But if it's not him, I don't see how they get there.
Because you've got LSU, you've got the question marks on what they're going to do. You've got the question marks at Arkansas, which is affected because the state of Arkansas has a top-heavy class, but they're a very talented top-heavy class, and all of those kids are eager to see what happens with Chad Morris and Craddock and the staff they've put together there and what they're able to do or not do and what the offense looks like.
There's a lot of excitement in that state.
It is insane to hear about and to watch.
I don't believe they have to win a lot of games to get those kids to join up.
No, I would say six.
I don't even think they have to win six. I think they have to look. They have to look like they're improving. Mm-hmm. They have to show excitement. All of those things. It's much like what I said about Ole Miss, like in the 2012 season, when everybody said they got to win all these games. No, they don't. You have to show something. You have to pass the eye test. That's all Arkansas has to do with those in-state kids is pass the eye test, and those kids are going to sign up and go.
I mean, yeah, you can't discount that. Especially switching from the Burt offense where you use seven linemen basically at a time, and you line up and run the ball, and compared to Chad Morris's offense where they're going to spread you out and they're going to get as far and heavy and long as a split as they possibly can between the receivers and just basically, you know, throw it and run the read option. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, how that works, especially with the personnel they have given. And then you've also got Mississippi State with an entirely new staff, a new coach, what they're going to do and how much they could or could not end up looking like Penn State's offense. I don't think they have a Trace McSorley. I don't think they have a Saquon Barkley. I don't think they have a Deshaun Hamilton. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, what takes place there and how that goes. And then Alabama's got several different position coaches, but I don't really expect anything different than the norm there. And then Auburn didn't switch coaches. Gus ended up sticking around. So you've got that. You've got the stability of Auburn. You've got Auburn tapping into Mississippi with Marcus Woodson. You've got these places and these things taking place that, you know, it's too hard right now to project what all is going to happen and who is or isn't going to be on the staff come December.
You mentioned we haven't talked about official visitors. Ole Miss has not had many. When do you think they try to do those? Late in the fall?
I would say the first big official visit weekend will be the Egg Bowl. I would say from then on until the early signing period, and then obviously in January going into February, because that's when statistically, at least in the past, that is when the Ole Miss gets kids on campus and they sign. When Ole Miss gets kids on these official visits like EJ Ndoma Ogar and Jalen Curry, who was supposed to visit and ended up getting canceled on pretty like maybe hours before his visit was supposed to begin. These kids, they come on these visits so early that they kind of they don't forget about the program, but the things just fall back, I guess you could say, as time goes on. You know, oh, I took that official visit in June. You know, I don't remember what that coach's name was. Like, you'd be amazed at how many kids go on official visits and you'll talk to them about it a month later and they'll be like, I don't remember who my host was. I don't remember what we did. Because they go on so many visits, they become so numb to everything taking place, and it's just interesting.
Yeah, I don't. If I'm running a program, I'm not spending a lot of official visits in the summer.
No,
too much can change.
Exactly. I mean, you had Arkansas who brought I think like 11 or 12 kids in at one weekend, and Colorado brought 15 in a couple weeks ago, right before the dead period. And I'm like, why? These kids, like, unless you know for a fact that your staff isn't changing in December, why are you doing this? It draws some question marks to me, and I think it shows a little bit of desperation almost to get these kids committed early because of the early signing period. But then again, this is the first time with early officials, so you've got coaches, you know, basically they're playing battleship with each other, and some are going to hit and some are going to miss, and they're going to try again next year.
How many of the current commits end up signing with Ole Miss? What's your estimate? That question's been asked in about 10 different ways here. That's probably the most boiled down way to do it.
Right. I mean, of the 22 right now currently committed, you've really got 19 because you've got everything going on with Dywan Black. Everybody knows what's going on. Yes, he's tearing it up at the opening. Yes, other companies may give him his fifth star. That's not going to change his situation. That's not going to change the things that have taken place over the past 3 years. And that is not going to change what ends up happening in December. But and then you've obviously got Tarekius Tisdale, who is one class away from being an Ole Miss Rebel for the fall, which they desperately need on the defensive line. And then you've got Jarian Ealy, who we've talked about in length and is not going to end up on campus. So you've really got 19. And then from there, I would say between 15 to 17 of those are going to sign. I know of at least one that won't, and I know of at least two to three who might not.
What's the latest with Byron Young?
Byron Young, he posted a tweet that everybody was a little bit frantic about just because there's so much going on. And what Byron sometimes wants to do is he just wants to be a kid. I mean, he's 17 years old. You know, he walks around with a knee brace. At least he did when I saw him. And sometimes these kids, they just want to enjoy their summer. They want to take a little bit of some time off and from recruiting because it gets so busy. You know, several top recruits talk to more reporters than they do coaches. And that's when it becomes a problem when you've got websites like HottieToddy.com. I mean, no offense to them. And you've got Red Cup Rebellion. You've got all of these other sites requesting interviews with kids. And these kids are like overwhelmed because somehow they get their phone numbers. And when they get their phone numbers, it blows up. And that kind of was a reason why N'Kobe Dean released his top schools list when he did right before finals at Horn Lake, because he didn't have a chance to focus on school because there were so many reporters and coaches and everything hitting him up.
Oh, and, stop calling them reporters. Stop it.
Fans.
So many fans calling him up.
Yes, but these fans, they pose as reporters and they ask these questions, and a lot of them will ask the same question over and over and over again until they get the answer they want. And these kids, when they first like emerge, like Cormonte Hamilton, the tight end from Whitehaven, when he was first kind of blowing up, he would answer anybody's phone calls. He would do anything he could to, you know, help get his name out and yada yada. He's got Alabama, Ohio State, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Virginia Tech now, and he's a lot more selective with who he talks to and who he answers the phone for, because there's so much of a loyalty factor, not just a loyalty factor, but a consistency factor, and the trust that reporters build with recruits when it comes to, you know, sharing information and, you know, possibly giving a commitment early. Like, you know, a recruit will text somebody and say, hey, I'm committing to Delta Tech in 2 weeks. Don't tell anybody, but I'm going to go public in 2 weeks. And whether or not a reporter leaks that or doesn't leak that, it could shape the future of their career. But at the same time, the opposing writers who have to deal with that, if it does get leaked, it puts them in a really awkward spot.
Yeah.
Sorry about the rant. It's just,
it's not even a rant.
It's true. Yeah. Because it's taking place so much now that these kids are,
they're 16, 17. There's no way they can nuance who's who.
Right.
It's impossible.
So right.
They end up lumping everybody together.
Yeah. And you don't want to be lumped in with HottieToddy.com. No offense to HottieToddy.com, but you don't want to be, you just don't. And being able to separate yourself from that, you know, to be clear in the fact that you aren't an Ole Miss fan, that you don't care where the kid goes, and that you want what's best for the kid in general.
That you're just trying to get the story.
Yeah, I'm just trying to follow your story and write about it.
I'm just trying to report.
Yeah, I'm trying to do my job. Yeah. I don't care where you go. I don't care what you think of Ole Miss. I don't care what you think of Mississippi State. I don't care. I want to cover your story and possibly get a heads up on where you're going before you make it public. That's about it.
That's it.
That's it. And I'd like to see you in camps if we invite you to a camp. I'd like you to show up. That's it.
Feel better?
I do.
Sometimes it just needs to be said. Any of the commits do you think have a chance to go from the 5.73 star to a 4-star?
Caleb Etienne, the offensive tackle, who several on the board for some reason think projects a guard. He is far too big to play guard, and he's got quick feet. He's just got to his feet are quick, but he's got to get the rest of his body moving, I guess is the way to put it. He's got to get at a healthy playing weight. Shanti Seastrunk from Louisville and DeAndre Prince from Charleston. If Prince is able to progress technically and able to use his speed as he did during the Ole Miss camps, he'll be fine. And he should. I mean, he's so close to being a 4-star that showing some progress early on in his senior year, he could be one of the first to get it.
Yeah, and this is where I will definitely stand up for rivals here. There are really, with no exception, so many people in that network who the one thing they want is to get it right.
Yeah.
They really want their list to be right. It's very competitive, the list thing. You don't want to miss. You don't want to have a kid ranked 83rd that ends up being one of the five best players in the class. You want to get it right.
That's right. And you also don't want a kid who's ranked in the top 70 who gets exposed at the 5-star challenge in front of all of the Rivals Network. And that becomes a bad look when you have someone rated so highly and then they perform so poorly when put on the national stage. That's not handed to them, but given to them.
Oh, sure. They don't want that.
No, not at all.
It's an embarrassment look among their peers. And they're all there together at those things.
And it's a lot easier to keep a kid at a 5.7 or a 5.6 than it is to put him early at a 5.8 and then go from there and possibly drop him down. Because the last thing, like the hardest thing to do on the Rivals Network is to gain and lose stars. Because you have to have a strong justification to take a star away from a kid. Like, let's say the Rivals wanted to make Daiwon Black a 5-star after seeing him hypothetically at the Rivals 5-star challenge that he didn't go to. Okay, let's say that wanted to take place. He would have to gain that star, and they would have to ignore all of the smoke around Black that would slow them down and it would stop them from doing it. But because of the way that things take place these days, it's happening more often than not.
I'll take a quick break from the questions to tell you that today's show is also brought to you by the Storage Acquisition Group. The Storage Acquisition Group is an industry-leading expert at identifying and acquiring strategically located storage facilities throughout North America and beyond. As the preferred buyer for one of the largest private owners of self-storage in the world, Director Monty Spencer and his team have appended the acquisitions market by giving facility owners a new avenue to divest. How exactly can self-storage facility owners benefit? It's simple. The group buys direct and charges no commission or fees. Their free, no obligation evaluation even means that you can get a comprehensive picture of your property's value without the need to commit. If you're thinking, yeah, but I don't own a self-storage facility. I was just enjoying the podcast. Well, then listen to this. Even if you're not an owner, you can benefit too. The Storage Acquisition Group's buyer has a generous referral program in place for referrals that lead to a closed transaction. Visit www.thestorageacquisitiongroup.com to find out more. All right, we got about 2 minutes left here. So let's touch on the last couple of these. How many of the current commits do you expect in January enrolled?
It's too early to figure that out. So many high schools are in the process of changing or not changing their policies on early enrollees, but I would expect most of the commitment list right now to sign early. I think the next to commit publicly has become pretty widely known, but there's also a local kid in Lafayette County who may be close as well.
Okay.
Not named Brandon Turnage.
Oh, really? All right. Last thing. We did not talk any NBA. I think I can answer this question for you. Oh, you're from Ohio. Was the one championship worth it for Cavs fans when they look around and see the current roster and LeBron gone? Yes.
100%, because that city has struggled for so long, and the fact that LeBron came back, did everything the right way, you know, made it public that he was going to bring a championship home, brought the championship home. I mean, last time when he left, everybody was burning his jersey and hating on him and everything, but like I tweeted yesterday when it became public, I mean, it's completely different this time around, because you have to respect what he's doing. Not just respect his hashtag, respect his decision, but at the same time, you know, LeBron did everything he could with that roster. And it's, part of me wonders if he got Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance off the Lakers because he didn't want them on the Lakers when he went there.
Well, if he did that, that's the greatest piece of chess that I've ever seen.
Because if you think about it, I mean, Clarkson played so poorly in the NBA Finals, and Larry Nance, obviously bringing him back home to Ohio was big. I think they're going to have to push the hell out of that. They're going to have to push the heck out of Larry Nance being back in Ohio, and they're going to have to flip the roster, and things are going to be really bad for the next 3 or 4 years. They're going to have to luck into a Kyrie Irving or, dare I say it, Bronny James Jr., and they're going to have to be prepared to lose. And the Browns fans, who are so eager to win games and to, you know, have some excitement around the program. I mean, you've got the Browns, you've got the Indians, but the Cavs are going to be bad for the next several years. We're still going to be a mediocre team. I mean, they'll fight for the 8 seed maybe with the roster they have put together now, but that's more of a statement on the Eastern Conference than it is a statement of the roster. The first thing I would do, other than trade Kevin Love, is fire Ty Lue.
If I were Cleveland, and I don't know that they can get Carmelo to do it, I would see if I could do a trade of Melo for Love, take Melo and buy him out. Give yourself all sorts of financial flexibility, and then let Melo ultimately go play for the Lakers for the minimum.
Right. And Melo, I don't think Melo would be starting on that team, and he wouldn't like that.
I think he might do it if LeBron told him to.
You think?
Yeah, I do. I think LeBron has that sort of pull. Here's what's interesting as we wrap up the NBA portion, and we thank everyone for listening. I think everyone in the league right now believes that Kevin Durant, yeah, I know it's crazy. I think they believe that Kevin Durant's leaving Golden State in a year.
True.
I think they think that there's a decent chance that Klay Thompson leaves. And I think they're looking around and saying, all right, maybe this is a 2-year window. That's why I think the Thunder's deal was so significant with Paul George. It's not about what do you do next year. It's about now you can exhale. Now you can take a big picture look at your roster and position yourself for the next 2 to 3 years. You don't have to be so focused on, oh God, this year. Because this year, for any team, can be upended by an injury, just like that.
Yeah, you saw that opening night with Boston.
Yeah, you saw it with Boston. You saw it with the Thunder in January when Roberson went down.
Yeah, I agree. That completely shifted the entire playoff picture.
And then here's the other thing, last thing that's interesting, is the Rockets, whether they're right or wrong, the Rockets believe internally that had Chris Paul not gotten hurt, they were winning that series.
And I vehemently disagree with that.
I do too, but they believe it. And so some of the decisions that they're making are being made with that in mind. So when everyone says, well, the West is complete, it's over, no chance, no one can do it, there are teams in that conference who disagree.
Yeah.
It's good. I'm glad, because it would sure as hell be boring if everyone in the league thought, well, there's no way we can catch the Warriors, so let's not do anything.
Right. Right, exactly. And for LeBron, it's also setting himself up post-career.
Yes.
In L.A. I thought it was really not touching, but it was nice the way it was done. Woj didn't break it. Shams didn't break it. No one broke it except his agent. And I thought that was kind of the professional way to do it. Because in so many other places, like you saw Cam Chancellor retire yesterday from the NFL, which I thought was crazy. But you saw him do it himself in a notes tweet. You didn't see Rappaport break it. You didn't see Schefter break it. And when these players are breaking the news themselves, it shows something. And it also kind of weighs a little bit into the recruiting side of the world, because these players are announcing their decisions themselves rather than it being sourced enough for others to break it themselves.
All right. Well, that does it for us. We'll We won't have one next week, but we'll have a soft verbal of some sort here in the next couple of weeks. I know you've got a little time off coming.
I've
got some time off coming. Frankly, July is going to be slow.
Yes, it will not be June. There will not be 11 commitments. There might be 11 minus 10.
Yeah. Coaches, this is the last opportunity for coaches to take time off.
Yes.
A lot of them do. They go spend some time with their families before they say goodbye to their families for the better part of 7 months.
Exactly.
So July will slow down. This podcast will slow down in July. We'll be back at some point, though, in the next couple weeks or ish, and have a podcast, and we'll get ready to crank it up for the fall, just like the teams and the players do. So until then, for Russell Johnson, our thanks again to Nick Kruger. I'm Neil McCready. That does it for this edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. Talk to you soon.